The departure of the Irish from Ireland in the 1800s had some tragic consequences. Jamie Hauser's songs, Men of New Basin Canal and Bridget's Prayer, dig into that. So we're going to dig into those songs and the album How America Saved Irish Music. And I have some great news to share from my upcoming album, Come Adventure With Me. Bandcamp now has playlists and Learning to Say No. This is Sci-Fi Pub Songs and Stories number 266, getting ready for St. Patrick's Day.
We're playing him a chance one night. Went into the pub, a fireman ran, his face all chalky white. "What's up?" says Brown. "Have you seen a ghost? Have you seen your Aunt Mariah?" "Me, Aunt Mariah, be buggers, is he? The bleeding pub's on fire." And there was Brown upside down, laughing at the whiskey on the floor. And booze, booze, the fireman cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre. We all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire." "Oh well," says Brown, "what a bit of luck. Everybody follow me. It's down to the cellar. The fire's not there. We'll have a grand old spree." So we went down at the good old Brown, the booze we could not miss. And we had him there 10 minutes or so till we were all quite pissed. And there was Brown upside down, lapping the whiskey at the floor. And booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre.
McIntyre!"
And we all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire. Then Smith walked over to the port wine tub, gave it a few hard knocks. Start taking off his pantaloons, likewise his shoes and socks. "Oh no," says Brown, "you can't do that. You shouldn't do that around here. You're washing your trousers in the port wine tub when we've got Miller Lite beer." Ugh. And there was Brown upside down, lapping the whiskey at the floor. And booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre.
McIntyre!"
And we all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire. Then there came through the old back door the vicar of the local church. And when he saw our drunken ways, he began to scream and curse. "Ah, you drunken sod, you heathen clods, you're taking no drunken spray. Now you drank up all the Benedictine wine, and you didn't save a drop for me." And there was Brown upside down, lapping the whiskey on the floor. And booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre. We all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire." Then there came an awful crash. "How'd the bloody roof gave way? We was almost drowned in the fireman's hose, but still we was gonna stay. So we got some tacks and some old wet sacks, nailed ourselves inside. And started drinking the finest rum till we was bleary-eyed. But why is the rum gone?" And there was Brown upside down, left the whiskey to the floor. And booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre.
McIntyre!"
And we all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire. Later that night when the fire was out, we came up from the cellar below. Our pub was burned, our booze was drunk, our heads was hanging low. "Oh, look," says Brown with a look quite queer. "Seems something raised his ire. Now we gotta get down to Murphy's Pub, it closes on the hour." And there was Brown, he was upside down, lopping a little whiskey on the floor. And booze, booze, the fireman cried as they came knocking at the door. "Well, don't let him in till it's all drunk up," somebody shouted, "McIntyre.
McIntyre!"
And we all got blue by paralytic drunk when the old Dunkel caught fire. And there was Brown, he was upside down, lopping a little whiskey on the floor. Let him in till it's all drunk up, somebody shouted, "McIntyre.
McIntyre!"
And we all got blue by paralytic pissed when the old Dunkel caught fire.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Pub Songs and Stories. This is the audio edition of my newsletter, as well as the liner notes for the songs I record, so that you can enjoy my music even more. And who am I? I am Mark Gunn, if you're not familiar with me. I am a rhythm and folk Celtic musician living in Atlanta, Georgia. I play traditional Irish and Scottish drinking songs, but I'm also a songwriter, and I write songs inspired by both Celtic culture as well as music inspired by pop culture, things like Lord of the Rings, Firefly, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, and much more. And that's the reason one brewery called my music Sci-Fi-rish music. And it's also why this is Sci-Fi Pub Songs and Stories. We are getting ready for St. Patrick's Day, and that's what this episode is all about. I have some stuff I want to share about the coming month. I also have some music, St. Patrick's Day music, for you to enjoy. And of course, if you want more St. Patrick's Day music, make sure you subscribe to the Irish and Celtic Music Podcast. That is one of the many podcasts that I host, and that one features Celtic music from around the world, a whole bunch of bands from around the world playing Celtic music, and I share it each and every week on the Irish and Celtic Music Podcast. You can head on over to CelticMusicPodcast.com to subscribe to that podcast and get more information. And if you want to come see me perform on St. Patrick's Day, I also want to recommend that you check out stpatricksdayparty.net. It's a website I put together with a whole bunch of St. Patrick's Day news and information. So as far as what I am doing for this month and the holidays, here is my list of upcoming shows. March 10th, I'm going to be at Tucker Brewing Company in Tucker, Georgia. March 11th, I'll be at Pontoon Brewing in Tucker, Georgia. And this is my first time at this venue. I've done the one in Sandy Springs, and I'm really excited to go play there. So I'd love it if you were able to make it out to those shows. That one's in the afternoon, and Tucker is, of course, in the evening, Tucker Brewing Company. March 15th is my St. Patrick's Day Internet Concert. It's on Bandcamp. Tickets are on sale by the time this podcast goes live. The show will be at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I really hope you'll come join me. I will be singing primarily Celtic songs, either original or traditional. So if there's something you want to hear, come join me for that. And of course, if you are a patron of mine, you'll get a 50% off your ticket price. That is on March 15th, Wednesday, March 15th. Now, March 18th is my next St. Patrick's Day show. It is in Sandy Springs at Pontoon Brewing, and that's going to be from 12 to 3 p.m. And that evening, I'll be in Lawrenceville at Iron Shield Brewing from 7 to 10 p.m. And those are the official St. Patrick's Day shows that I have this year. Now, I should point out that I might have an unofficial one that I'm hoping to do. I was sitting here tossing about the idea for my birthday. What do I want to do for my birthday? My wife, unfortunately, she's going to be out of town. So it's just me and the kids. And I was like, well, you know what would be really amazing? If I could go sing St. Patrick's Day music with my daughters. And I don't have any shows lined up. I decided if I wanted to actually book a show, an official show, I wanted to get paid an obscene amount of money because March 17th is my birthday, after all. I was born on St. Patrick's Day. So I was like, no, I don't want that. I'm not interested in the money. What I want is the experience. I want to be with my daughters and sing some songs. So we are tentatively planning to go to Decatur somewhere and sing some music for about 30 minutes sometime on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. And Inara and I will be doing our own little performance for her school earlier in the day, so I'm really excited about that as well. And oh, and if you want to join me on a Celtic invasion vacation, every year I travel to Ireland or Scotland or other locations, and we sort of get to know the area where we're staying. This year we're doing a Celtic invasion of County Mayo, Ireland, and it's going to be brilliant. It's June 3rd through 10th. I do still have space available as I record this, so drop me a line if you want to join me, CelticInvasion.com if you want to find out details. All right, so earlier this year, the beginning of the year, I went to a convention called Gefilk, and I met Lauren Oxford, and we did these things called, I think, called 2x2s, and basically you got two songs that you could play, and there was a bunch of artists up there. The one who blew away everyone, I think, in my opinion, was Lauren Oxford. She did a song called Siren that was just wow. It was mesmerizing. I was just totally entranced. But since then, she released her debut self-titled album, Lauren Oxford, and one of the tracks on there that I really love is called What Rings True. It's an original song that she wrote, and I'm going to play it for you right now. You can find her at laurenoxford.com. Follow the links in the show notes.
Sometimes it stays a while, walks holes into my shoes, it dulls the edges of my smile, it loves the dark and sings the blues, beguiling lies it speaks to me in manner logical and plain, says if you love her, set her free. She's trapped and you're the window pane. Bad worry comes more than it goes, but this is what rings true. Not every love conjectures you will constantly revise. I know I'm more than what I've learned from my parents, from the world. A fading would not give up their fur, but you were scared and lonely too. We made a home, we took a chance, our wings now warm, we flew and flew, diurnal moths in sunlight dance. My worries come more than they go, is what rings true. Not every love will last, I know, but some of them do, some of them do. My worries come more than they go, but this is what rings.
next album is called Come Adventure With Me. I launched a Kickstarter for it last summer, and it did amazingly well. Technically speaking, I'm supposed to release it to my Kickstarter supporters in July, but I don't want to wait that long. So I am currently trying to finish it up. My goal is to have it done by St. Patrick's Day, my birthday. So my birthday gift to you, if I can make it happen. In fact, you know, there will be a birthday gift to everyone. I'll have at least, I'm going to add three songs to the EP that you'll be able to get with the next episode of this podcast. So I'm just going to promise that right now. At least three songs will be in the next EP. So mark your calendars for March 17th. But that's what I'm so excited to have some new music to share. Again, a lot of songs I've been writing with as part of the In the Verse podcast, plus some other stuff, but it's going to be amazing. So last week, my engineer, Mitchell, he sent me three songs to listen to, and I listened to each of them while I was getting my car emissions tested. And we spent the morning emailing back and forth. It was perfect timing because I have a lot of trouble sometimes when I have a lot of work to do. I don't have time to listen and vice versa. But he sent me these three songs. Two of them, I loved the mixes, and they are now done. The third one, I was going to put on hold. And it still might be on hold. It might not make it for this album. I don't know. The song Redemption that I wrote, inspired by a Doctor Who episode, is the one in question. I sent a recording to Mitchell, and we were having trouble getting a mix. Part of it is that I think part of the problem is I play really loud, and it makes it difficult to mix, to get exclusive mixes, because I play it live as well, and so it gets picked up by my vocal a microphone, which is fine most of the time, unless I'm playing really loud. Sometimes if I can play softer or redirect it, whatever the case, it was not quite working. Plus, my rhythm was off in a few spots. I liked having a note dropped at one point. I really liked that spot, and I don't know if it's going to stay in there or not, but I like that. But this was other stuff that was thrown in. It just kind of annoyed me. So I finally decided I don't want to release that recording. And that's the one that Mitchell sent me. So I decided, what am I going to do instead? Well, I emailed Rich Brotherton, who has recorded on a few tracks for me for this album. I said, hey, here's my situation. I love this song, but it needs to be re-recorded. And I wanted to see if you would be willing to record a guitar track to go as something for me to record on top of, and then lay my auto harp and vocals on top of. That's my ultimate goal. And of course, he sent something back, and it was fantastic. And I was like, okay, proof of concept. It was good to go. So he and I are going to work on that. He should be getting me a track very soon. I wouldn't be surprised if it arrives in my email box today, in fact, which means I have to sit down and record. That's going to be the toughest part with this whole process, is making time to record. I have a busy week ahead. So we shall see. We'll see how that comes. If I can get it done and we can get it mixed in with all the other tracks that we have planned, then I will definitely do that. But otherwise, I might save it for the next album. But I should have a general track listing coming soon to people who supported the Kickstarter. So keep an eye open for that. The other cool thing that I did this week was my album pins. Now, if you're not familiar with the album pins are lapel pins that have maybe a cool design or a cool phrase. So they need something to stand out. My goal is to make something that anyone might want. But if you want the music too, it's a bonus. You know, you're getting two for one if you get the music and the album. But I want anyone to be able to come by and say, ooh, I like that. I need to own that. And then they buy it. That's my goal. But I've spent the last year trying to come up with an album pen design and phrase that got me excited, that I thought you would be excited about as well. And finally, I was listening to a whole bunch of podcasts on artificial intelligence and ChatGPT and Midjourney was another one. That's a visual artificial intelligence website. And they were talking about all the cool things you can do. So I was like, huh, I wonder. So I asked ChatGPT for a list of like 20 or 30 slogans based on dragons and hobbits and overcoming fear. And it gave me this wonderful list. None of them ended up being used, actually, but one of them had a slight change, modification. So the one that Miranda liked a lot was, and she created a compass for that to highlight it, which came off really cool. It says, never stop adventuring. And I really like that phrase. And then the other one was created, the basic idea was created through Midjourney. I went over there and had again, proof of concept to come up with a design. And it came up with this cool dragon. And that one says, come adventure with me, which has a scary looking dragon. And then you have this come adventure with me phrase, which sort of says, yes, we're going to overcome fear. It's scary, but let's get through it. So anyways, I did some polls on Patreon and I was trying to figure out which of these two pins to print. And the polls came out ambiguous. It was like split right down the middle. So I finally decided to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to print both of them. I found out that I can print both of them. So I'm going to. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do a survey on Kickstarter. And the pin that gets the most interest, that one will be the one that I probably keep releasing. So that's the plan for now. So stay tuned for that. And of course, if you supported the Kickstarter, March 17th, it'll be here. All right, let's get some more music before we get to our story. This is Whiskey in the Jar. It features Andrew McKee on the recorder. It's from my CD, St. Patrick's Day.
Saying, send and deliver, for I am bold deceiver, mooshering the madoo da ma da. Wet for the daddy o, wet for the daddy o, there's whiskey in the jar. I counted out his money and it made a pretty penny. I put it in me pocket and I took it home to Jenny. She sighed and she swore that she never would deceive me. For the devil take the women, for they never can. Daddy, oh, there's whiskey in the jar. I went
Did you enjoy that recording? Because if you did, you can download it for free. That's right. You can get a digital EP with each episode and download all of my songs that are in this show. Just send an email to pubsong@keltfather.net. pubsong@keltfather.net. You will get an autoresponder with a link to download this month's album. You can also subscribe to the podcast if you're not already. It's quick and easy. And while you're emailing me to get your free EP, you can also let me know what you're doing while listening to this episode. I'd love to know what you're doing. Your thoughts. And it's time for the story of the men of New Basin Canal. So I was living in New Orleans back in 2009, and I got a phone call from Jamie Hauser. She was driving back from an Irish session in New Orleans to her home in Robert, Louisiana. It's across the causeway, which is a long bridge that goes from, well, I'll tell you in a moment. But she told me she had written the lyrics for two songs, and she asked if I could set them to music. And of course, I'm like, yes, whatever you want, happy to do it. But then she told me how the causeway she was driving across had once been the New Basin Canal. And that was a shipping canal from Lake Pontchartrain through the swamp to booming uptown New Orleans. Well, work on the canal began in 1832 and almost immediately ran into problems. Yellow fever. Yellow fever was ravaging the workers. Now, they started off using slaves to dig the canal, but because of yellow fever, they were dying, which, and at the time, slaves were property, and it was too costly to use slaves to build the canal. So instead, Irish immigrants were hired to build it. And many people don't realize that New Orleans was one of the top immigration points for the Irish, behind New York and Boston. And as a result, it's estimated that between 500 and 30,000 Irishmen died digging the New Basin Canal. No one knows for sure the exact number, and Wikipedia suggests probably more of the 8,000 number might be more accurate. But wow, 8,000 people dying to dig this canal over a period of about 10 years. So Jamie decided to write a song called Men of New Basin Canal to share their story. I'm going to play it right here, come back to talk a little bit more about it.
Heave ho, boy, always digging down. Heave ho, God help us all. Here we came to find the land that our fathers never had. No land we found, but only death from fever, the yellow jack. The yellow jack, one day you're up the neck, you're in your grave. Down New Basin Canal, we're caught for us 6 miles of pain. Heave ho. Like a Mayo gale, too few to word to dig the trench, too few to bear away. Heave ho, boy, always digging. Heave ho, God help us all. Heave ho, boy, always digging. Heave ho, God help us all. Why is it Aaron's sons are called when slaves are cannot spare? When earth and water must be moved to make the rich men share. From lake to river to move the goods to make the rich men more. Down we fall time and again with none to hear our prayer. Hey-ho, boy, always digging. Hey-ho, God help us all. Hey-ho, boy, always digging. Hey-ho, God help us all. We'll be known as men who die, we'll live to make our mark. The men of New Basin Canal, known as New Orleans' own. Hey-ho, boy, oh, it's digging. Hey-ho, God help us all. Hey-ho.
So obviously, I love this song. It is a wonderful tribute to these people who lived and died digging this canal. And it's a powerful story. It had me totally mesmerized, imagining the almost shanty style of work to dig the canal. So when I came up with the melody and chorus, that's the rhythm that I picked, especially with the heave ho boy oh, it's digging death. It just screamed sea shanty. So later, of course, Jamie and I recorded it for the song, for the CD, How America Saved Irish Music. And the one thing I had to add was a crash cymbal, because there's a, I like sing-alongs, I like interaction, and I was already learning by then that how to get that a little bit more into shows. And I still don't teach it nearly as much, but in particular, I always imagine it like this. Heave-ho, boy, yo, it's digging death. Heave-ho, God help us all. Heave-ho, boy, oh, it's digging death. Heave-ho, God help us all. Just good interaction song, right? And easy to teach, which is something that is not always the case with when you're writing drinking songs or sing-alongs. But it has this great energy. And for the recording, I didn't really want clapping. I wanted that crash cymbal that you heard. It's much like it's similar to the one that was used in the song Zombie by the Cranberries. They had that ch-ch-ch-ch, which is just really cool sound. It's just a wonderful, I don't know, it's got this angst to it. It's just so cool. But I asked the engineer, TJ Behrens, to add that, and I love how that came off. Now, Jamie, of course, didn't stop at just one song when she sent it. She also sent Bridget's Prayer, and it's basically the same story, but it's from the perspective of the women who watched their men die digging the canal, the ones buried. These are the ones who buried them. And it's another great song. And again, in this one, Jamie sang, and it was a bit more ballady. And I'll share that with you in just a moment. But a big thanks to TJ Behrens, again, our sound engineer, Dr. Sick, who provided fiddle and mandolin on the recording, and Katie Hauser, who shared some amazing background vocals for the album. Now, what I want to share with you right now is an interview that I did with Jamie Hauser about the time that the album was being released. And I originally had a podcast called Celtic Interviews, and it's no longer around. But I still have the recording, and I thought I'd share that. And we don't talk specifically about the songs. Instead, it's mostly about the album. And I hope you enjoy this interview. Here is Jamie Hauser. Welcome, Jamie Hauser.
Thank you, Mark. Welcome to my home.
Yes, we are in her home during the Louisiana Renaissance Festival, and taking a moment away from the fair to talk about this.
But you know, this is really where that whole album took its genesis. It was just you and me talking over many hours,
and in New Orleans, and here.
Well, you know, I think and a lot of this album really has to do with the fact that New Orleans has an enormous Irish heritage, and it's just now really starting to be recognized, other than the Irish, St. Patrick's Day parade. So, you know, this was a deep interest to me. As a historian, I've done a lot of research in this stuff, and really being able to apply the musical element to this was fascinating for me.
But before we get to the album, I want to tell me a little bit about your history. You mentioned history, but you have a long history in New Orleans. Tell me a little about it.
I do, actually. I'm German-Irish, which is a very traditional sort of mix in New Orleans, because a lot of Germans came here in 1848, and they were all Catholics, because they came out of Bavaria, which my family came from, or part of my family. Then the other part of my family came from Ireland, probably, as a result of the potato famine, some of them before that. A lot of them were County Mayo. And so, the Irish girls and boys and the German girls and boys who were Catholic, actually from Bavaria, they met and married. And so it's a very, very common sort of a mix in New Orleans. And so I think that the love of that, and, the fact that we really are, Laura Kelly has just done a spectacular new book about the Irish in New Orleans. Just having read about the Irish experience in the United States in general. In fact, one of our songs, Leaving of Liverpool, I think touched on that. The fact that so many people from New Orleans, came from Liverpool because it was the cheapest way to get to to the United States. So the Irish would go to Liverpool and then ride the cotton ships back to New Orleans. And so that's how they wound up here. Plus, I think our Catholic heritage in New Orleans had a lot to do with that. So, yeah, this has been fascinating. Everything from, you know, the truly, you know, truly scholarly texts about the immigration experience. I mean, there was Kirby Miller's Ireland and the Irish Exodus to North America. Thomas Gallagher wrote a really cool book called Paddy's Lament, about the whole diaspora experience and situation. So that all fascinated me. And then, you know, as you know, I had a unique experience driving home one night from an Irish Cayley at Deutsch's house in New Orleans, where, you know, really gave me the inspiration for one of our songs. And Men of New Basin Canal was really about the estimates are anywhere from 10,000 to 30,000 Irishmen died digging the canal in the 1830s. And the reason why they used Irish navvies or Irish laborers is because they were expendable. I mean, essentially, the Irish were more economically feasible to use than slaves in building this canal that went between the Mississippi River and Lake Pontchartrain. And so it was very, you know, important economic stimulus for the city of New Orleans. But unfortunately, up to 30,000 Irishmen died building it. So driving home from this Cayley, and I just, you know, because the New Orleans Pontchartrain Expressway, which is part of I-10, it follows that route. And so as a consequence, I got home and I just couldn't stop thinking about the fact that there were probably 30,000 Irishmen buried along that route, because they buried them where they fell. During the yellow fever epidemics, I'm sorry, I should have explained this earlier, but these men died because of the yellow fever epidemics in New Orleans in the 1830s. And when they fell, they were carried off to a nearby pit and, you know, and basically mass buried. You know, in the song, I think that the thing that you took out of it, and I think that I really valued, was the notion that, we didn't just lie there. You know, basically the Irish came to be very powerful in New Orleans in terms of politics and leadership. And so there's a really strong proponent or a strong element of this that really speaks to my hometown, New Orleans, very powerfully. So I'm very happy that we did that.
Now, I think you've told me in the past that you were a history major in school. Is that right?
I was, in fact, a history major, and I still have, you know, have employment. But, you know, so if you are a liberal arts major, take heart in that. So, you know, the fact is that the history of anything is important to me. And in this particular case, it was particularly important because of my heritage. So many of my forebears came from County Mayo. And as you know, when we were there back, what was it, 2008?
2008.
I went on one of the wonderful, wonderful Celtic invasions that Mark leads. Me and my daughter Katie, and we went and went over Healy Pass, which unfortunately was a beautiful, beautiful place, but it was unfortunately where so many of the famine families fell and died because they couldn't make it over the pass to County Mayo and down into Westport, which is where a lot of people shipped out from. So, you know, that was evocative for me, certainly. You know, I think when you join history with heritage, it's an extremely powerful impetus. So that was part of what powered my love for this album. I love, love, love this album.
Now, history, you say, was an important part of it. And how did it affect you? I mean, the title and such. Because I know you're a voracious reader.
Well, yeah. You and I both, of course, read Thomas Cahill's book, you know, How Irish Saved Civilization, which was, the impetus really for this title. And this was one of the most enjoyable collaborative experiences of my life. I think we worked on this thing for 6 years, you know, just throwing back and forth. And finally, we decided, and I think this is key, that it was not critical for us to be 100% historically accurate in what we represented, because we brought songs like Ivy Slolo, which is a Provençal famine song, into this because of the famine. We brought in, certainly some other songs that didn't necessarily have to do specifically with the Irish in Louisiana or in America. But I think we were successful in capturing the sensibility, if you will, of the time and the temper. I mean, you know, I cannot even imagine, like Stormacree, Can you imagine waving goodbye to your family or your husband and knowing he's going across?
Tell me about Storm McCree.
Oh, Storm McCree. That's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful song. And it's about basically a husband having to leave his family behind in Ireland to go make a living elsewhere. Because, as the whole economy of Ireland was torn apart by the English. And I mean, basically because of the land requirements. Ireland is an incredibly rich land with great agrarian resources. But because the English owned everything, the Irish had to leave to go elsewhere to make a living. So the song is a wife singing to her husband about him having to leave to make a living and hoping that he will come back. So it just tore me up. I mean, I've heard it a number of versions of it. Bonnie Raitt's notably when she was working with, what's the name of the band? Help me.
The Chieftains.
Chieftains, there thank you. An incredibly beautiful song. And, but also we've included, some of the transformations of songs that were originally Irish. You know, I think the notable one is the Bard of Armagh and to Streets of Laredo, where the tune was picked up. But then also we've included some other songs that were not, again, necessarily traditionally those that would have belonged in this kind of a thing. You know, Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. I mean, come on, let's fess up. We just like it.
Well, we sing it so well.
Yeah, we do. So. But Who's Gonna Shoe, Your Pretty Little Foot, that is not necessarily technically Irish, but it really speaks to some of the Irish impact on American music. Can I mention my affinity for the notion that Irish music really led to some of it informed jazz?
Yeah.
Specifically in New Orleans.
Let me pause you for just a second.
Yes.
Because, one of the things that I've always loved about Jamie is she loves music and she's knowledgeable about a lot of things, and particularly with a lot of the southern blues. And you mentioned Bonnie Raitt and what's her Delta Blues. There's a lot. So you came to this conclusion, which was
was not my original thought. This was actually a guy named Neil Cassidy who came up with the notion that the word of jazz actually was a derivative of the Irish teas, which is fun. But let me set the scene for you. So you had these neighborhoods in New Orleans, notably known as the Irish Channel, where you had people, stevedores, you had Irish people and other immigrant people living cheek by jowl with African Americans. And, it's documented that there were bands that played that music. And so I can't help but think that Irish ceilidh music, where you have an Irish session going on and, it goes from musician to musician to musician, helped inform jazz in terms of the way that it's structured. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
It's a great story.
Well, it is a great story. But I think there's other people, certainly more knowledgeable than I am who are working on this theory already. I mean, Tulane University has a fabulous jazz archive. And Nick Spitzer from American Roots, I know that he's referenced this a few times. So I think that it's an idea that is powerful. And here's an interesting twist on this. With our whole national dialogue right now about immigration is thinking through the notion of where would we be if the cultural underpinnings of our country had not been established by waves of immigrants. So, I think that it's interesting to think about everything in context. And in this particular instance, the fact that Irish music was so important to American music overall, I think, is where we were really going with the CD. Would you agree, Mark?
Well, I got a little bit of that as well as the reverse. So mine actually, for me, it went back the other way as well, because I feel like the American influence on Irish music was just as important. Because of the laws that the British passed, the Irish music was, to a large degree, banned in many places. And, it's like the idea of, in Scotland, the banning of the playing of the pipes and such. Mm-hmm. But even the fiddle and such, there were laws that were forbidding people to play music. And so when they left, they moved to America, and American music in the past century has greatly influenced the resurgence of Irish music.
And you and I both had that experience when we were in Dublin. It's harder to find Irish music than it is to find country western. I'll never forget sleeping in my bed at the B&B at the Anchor Guest House in Dublin, and wafting in through the window, did I hear trad Irish music? No, it was Johnny Cash. So, I think, but at the same time, we can't overlook the notion that all kinds of music informs other kinds of music. So, I think there's been a definite resurgence emergence. And honestly, I really attribute a lot of this to the whole Irish dance movement, too, has really caused a resurgence of interest.
River dance had a huge impact, absolutely.
But, you know, I think that there's the other thing that's kind of a strong, or I hope a strong element here is, you know, we did a number of songs on here that were investing in peace, like Johnny, I Hardly Knew You, and, you know, Mrs. McGraw, you know, and I think the notion that that's another undercurrent, I think, underpinning that informed this. You know, and can I give a shout out to the fabulous people who helped us with this? I mean, T.J. Behrens at you know, at the in the studio who really was an incredible engineer with this, and Dr. Sick, bless his heart. This is a man who's the best fiddle player I've ever heard of. He walked in, listened to a track, and laid down the most amazing music and fiddle background. Also mandolin. He just stepped in and said, "What do you want?" We said this, and then my daughter, of course, Katie, doing backup vocals. Was wonderful also. So, you know, I think that I hope people enjoy this album for what it's meant to be, which is certainly music, a great music, and Mark is one of the most fabulous musicians you'll ever work with. But the other piece of this really is the fact that we all are immigrants in some way, and, you know, we find our culture where we need to find it, and in New Orleans in particular, the Irish culture took root and grew and informed the city, and, you know, people like Margaret Horry, who was an amazing woman. She landed, she was penniless, established 3 or 4 orphanages in the city.
Is that the lass who has a little statue?
Yes.
She got a statue down on, what is that street? I don't know.
It's on Camp Street. You know, we really need to think about having somebody do an Irish tour of New Orleans, because I think it would be, and they probably already do, but, you know, and really acknowledging the link here between those two cultures, which has been so, so important, I think, over the years. You know, I've had the good fortune to visit Ireland more than once, and so the Irish, unfortunately, have a really good sense of what it's like to be a defeated people and to have to live under the yoke. And certainly New Orleans shared some of that post-Civil War. And don't get me wrong, I'm not at all in any way, shape, or form opposed to the things that happen after a war that this need to happen. But the bottom line is that we all have cultural and other forces that divide us. And, you know, let's take a lesson here and let's learn how to unify them. And
I think that's one of the great things about just America. And,
right.
You know, was it Chuck that picked the cover?
I did pick that cover up. Yeah, no, let me give a nod to Chuck Davis, who's our wonderful graphic artist. Yeah, he's done, I think, all of our CDs.
And yeah, you were researching a lot for trying to. Great little old picture. Was this a...
It's an old, you know, illustration from a newspaper back in the 19th century. And the fact is that this actually shows them, you know, arriving in New York, because it's got the Statue of Liberty there. But, you know, this cover, the thing really needed to evoke that whole notion of immigrant. And right. I think that really did it, you know, very powerfully. I think that, you know, the other thing that for me that is really important about this is the fact that, you know, we have to think about how do we merge culture. And I think that this is a great example of that. And, you know, as an historian, I also appeal to people to look at history to inform us now in terms of how we need to behave in these very trying times. And divisiveness is never the answer. So the merger of culture and the love of music can make so much of a difference.
I think that's a your epitaph. It's one of the things that I love about you is that your ability to recognize this whole album concept was tough for me. Mm-hmm. You know, do I just do a compilation of immigrant songs or do we turn it into something much more? And I feel like we successfully did that. We created an album that was it's bigger than just an album.
Well, but you know, Mark, you make a habit of doing that. I mean, you've integrated all kinds of things, like love of cats and and love of let's see what else, Firefly, and love of a lot of things. But I think that that's integrative spirit. I mean, you heard me, you listened to me about this kind of stuff, and I think that's, you know, having a partner.
We had a lot of good talks over oysters.
So. But you know, having the opportunity to work with somebody who really gets it, you know, and can understand and can understand why I wanted to throw a 13th century song from France on this CD. You know, it didn't make a whole lot of sense intellectually, but you know, to me, it certainly did. So, this thing was an absolute work of love and passion. And, you know, I think that that's what really drove us to want to work on this together. So it was something that acknowledged our roots, yours too. I mean, you know, I think that all of that came together to really create a work that I'm proud of.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Cool. So.
Oh, Michael, please don't go today. You're shaking like a leaf. We will make do, oh, storm our own. We will make do somehow. I've washing in, I can do more. Just don't go back, I pray. It's death, my darling, one I know. It's death in that new canal. I pray in holy Bridget's name. I pray, God help us all.
That, of course, was Bridget's Prayer. It's from our album, How America Saved Irish Music. Join the club! The show is brought to you by my Gunrunners on Patreon. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you can join the club. Every week, you'll get bonus podcasts or downloadable songs or printed sheet music, blogs, or stories from the road. Plus, you get weekly access to my Coffee with the Celt Father video concerts. You can sign up for as little as $5 per month and save 15% with an annual membership. Big thanks to my newest Gunrunners on Patreon, Alice Masolia, Carla Arnold, Triskaley, that's an all-female Celtic band that has been recently added to the podcast, and Aiden Broadhead. Thank you all so much for supporting the show and putting your faith in me to create some great content for you. I hope you find it wonderful and valuable, and I'd love your thoughts about it, so let me know. Saying no, even if it's included. Inara asked me to fill her juice bottle up to a certain line. No higher, she said. And I asked her why. She said it was because if she drinks more than that, she'll get filled up and not be hungry for breakfast. And I was blown away that age 8, she knows something about limits. I don't know if I've learned that at 51 here, so... And she also knew that it was too tempting if I gave her more than her limit. In fact, she had finished the bottle. She hadn't finished quite the bottle. She drank half the bottle. I guess I gave her a little bit more than half, and then she left a little bit at the end, and I saw her eyeing it afterwards, and she was like, I picked it up. I was like, here, let me help you out. But she knew she might end up drinking it. So Seth Godin published a blog post, which this made me think of, which is called But It's Included. You can find him at seths.blog. But it's included. Perhaps your wedding package includes a cake. It paid for, better eat it, even if you're allergic to wheat. Perhaps the amusement part includes as many rides as you like, even if you're feeling sick or have had quite enough for today. The thing about included is that it's free, but the other thing is that you can say no. No might be better than free. I love that thought. I mean, how many times do we find ourselves, someone brings us something and we're like, yeah, sure, I'll take that. Yeah, like fast food is a great example. Now, they do it a little bit less. I think their lawsuits have prevented it. But do you want to upsize that? Yes, why not? It's just cost 30 cents more, you know. Do you want the meal? No, actually, no, I don't really want the meal. And that's where I'm at now. I'm at, you know, I go to McDonald's. I'm like, let me think about this. Do I want the burger? I think all I want is a burger. All I want is a burger. I don't even want a Coke. Or maybe I'll take a small Coke. Small Coke. Yeah, okay. I'll have a small Coke. You know? But usually it's like I just don't want to be upsized. I want what I want, and I don't need more. Yes, I would eat more. You give me, put food in my front of my face, I'm going to eat more. But it's not like I need it. But I really started thinking about this in terms of environmentalism. So the album pen printer that I use is JS-JJ, and they automatically put each album pen in plastic when it is shipped. And I really don't want those little pieces of plastic that encase each pen. So it occurred to me as I was writing this up that I could say no, and I can ask them not to put it in there. I don't know if they'll be able to do it or not, if they, you know, they have processes and systems, and maybe I might have to find someone else. Who knows? But I could say, no, thank you. I really appreciate it, but no. Sometimes I go to like when I go to the grocery store, I am really good these days of bringing a tote bag to carry my own groceries so I can say no to plastic bags. But there's a lot of food, fruits and vegetables that are in plastic bags. And though it's a little gross to me, I frequently pick out the fruits and vegetables that are not in plastic bags. You know, you can get broccoli in a plastic bag, or you can just pick it up and put in your thing. You can't do that with cauliflower. What is that about? The only thing I can think of is that maybe cauliflower bruises and people get a little too disgusted with it a little bit too easy. I don't know. But broccoli, you can definitely choose between the two. And I'm choosing more to pick, you know, just the without nothing on it. Now, of course, again, it does gross me a little bit out when I put it on the scanner, you know, the fruits and stuff. But now I'm getting into the habit of washing them when I get home. And of course, I don't need more stuff in my life. If I buy it, it needs a reason to stick around. And sometimes that can be for pure enjoyment. Sometimes it's like archiving something. I've had many people when I just did a post, a poll asking, you know, do you still use CDs? Or what type of media do you prefer to listen to music to? And a lot of people are saying, I still buy CDs and I use them for archiving the music. USBs, I have like my two USBs that I released that have like 10 albums, 10 plus albums each. But those are great archive tools as well. But most of the time, it's got to be something practical. So I do my best to say no. And obviously, I'm not perfect. There's a whole bunch of things. I've been going through my stuff in my office and saying, what are these things do I want? What are these things do I need? What are these things can I get rid of? The one that came to me earlier was the Red Dwarf DVDs. I loved Red Dwarf. It was in the time that I watched it, it was wonderful. It suited me well. I don't know. I mean, it's still funny, but I don't actually sit down to watch it because I don't have time. I don't have time to watch DVDs as much as I did. I used to spend all my time working and doing DVDs. But when I'm trying to compose podcasts, it makes it a little bit more difficult to do just that. So, but those DVDs, are they going to stay with me forever? Probably not. At some point, I'm probably going to say it's time for me to get rid of those DVDs and move on to a different period of my life. And there's same with books. Now, I have a lot of books that are referential and a lot of books that I love. Those I keep. But this goes back to, what was it, Marie Kondo with the method of you know, does this bring you joy? Some things don't bring me as much joy as other things. So I'm definitely trying to put that into my life. And sometimes I have to say, no, I don't need more stuff. I can get rid of things. I can tell someone, you know, when they try to say, hey, do you want something extra? And I know that this poses a huge problem for musicians in particular, I think of, who, you know, streaming music. I love streaming. I listen to streaming. I would rather, though, if I was to start over right now, I would definitely not release CDs. I would probably focus more on the album pens, probably not shirts because they stick around for too long and the sizing is so difficult. I'd do some tote bags, but even there, you know, there's some problems with that. I'm still looking for new methods of finding things to sell that are more environmentally friendly, but I wouldn't be doing CDs. And I would be encouraging people to sign up on Patreon. That would be the number one way of supporting my music. Sign up on Patreon. I'd be telling that at every show. You know, you have Patreon? That'd be the entire thing. So, hey, everyone, I have Patreon. Just because that is the best way to support my music, for me to grow as a musician, to pay for things like the song Redemption with Rich Brotherton. The biggest problem with hiring him to record on there is that it's more expensive than some of the other musicians that I have hired. And so all of a sudden, the money that I raised for my Kickstarter is probably not going to be enough. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But that's how I'd be trying to make a living as a musician, with Patreon, or maybe some selling digital stuff on, and some products over on Bandcamp, like I'm currently doing. But still, it would be a different world. I would say no to CDs. Obviously, I'm not going to do that now, but because it's a different world that I'm currently in. But I don't know. It definitely has me thinking. What would you do, or what do you say no to? Do you think about that at all when you're do you think about what's better for the environment, for the climate, and whatnot? I would love your thoughts. Tell me, what do you say no to? All right, I'm going to play a song. This is not going to be in the EP because it is by the Brobdingnagian Bards, even though that is one of my projects. But this is The Orange and the Green. It's from our CD, Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. And it's also Andrew McKee and I, my partner in crime with the Brobdingnagian Bards. We have a new podcast coming out, the Brobdingnagian Bards podcast, a new episode, and we're talking about artificial intelligence, and we talk about the album pens, designs, and stuff, the cool things and the less cool things about artificial intelligence. And I hope you'll check it out, because it's a really cool episode, and it raises a lot of interesting ideas that you might want to know about for the future. All right, here is The Orange and the Green from the Brobdingnagian Bards.
Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. Oh, me father was an Ulster man, proud Protestant was he. Me mother was a Catholic girl from County Cork was she. They were married in two churches, lived happily enough, until the day when I was born and things got rather tough. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. Baptized by Father Riley, I was rushed away by car to be made a little orange man, me father, shining star. I was christened David Anthony, but still in spite of that, to me father I was William, while me mother called me Pat. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. With mother every Sunday to mass I'd proudly stroll, and then after that the Orange Lodge would try to save my soul. For both sides tried to claim me, but I was smart, because I'd play the flute, I'd play the harp, depending where I was. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. Now when I'd sing those rebel songs, much to me mother's joy, me father would jump up and say, "Look here, would you, me boy? That's quite enough for that lad." He'd then toss me a coin, and he'd have me sing the orange flute to the heroes of the Boyne. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. One day me ma's relations came round to visit me, just as me father's kinfolk were all sitting down to tea. We tried to smooth things over, but they all began to fight, and me being strictly neutral, I bashed everyone in sight. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. Me parents never could agree about me type of school. Me learning was all done at home, that's why I'm such a fool. They've both passed on, God rest them, but they left me caught between that awful color problem of the orange and the green. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green. Oh, it is the biggest mix-up that you have ever seen. Me father, he was orange, and me mother, she was green.
All right, we have one final section I want to talk to you about, which is Bandcamp app now has playlists. When I started selling on Bandcamp, one of the reasons One of the many reasons I signed up there was because, number one, you could download music as MP3s, and you can also download it in just any format. They have like several formats. I know you can do like OGG. I don't really know what these things are, but you can download like a dozen different formats, a WAV file if you really want it. You can download it, which is just fantastic. It's a great option for music lovers to be able to download whatever format that they prefer. Variable bitrate MP3s. That's an option. Or you can do the 320. It's great. But the other reason I got it was I started using it was because of the app. They have a really cool app that allows you to stream an album by your favorite band. So you can buy a copy of St. Patrick's Day and you can stream it on the app. Now, up until now, you could not create a playlist that allows you to play that song from me, a song from the Broadway Night Game Bards, and a song from Lauren Oxford. You didn't have a way to create a playlist to do that. But that is no longer the case. They just updated the app, and now you can use the playlist. So that's really a cool little feature. So head on over, download the app. You can also, while you're over at magerecords.com, find a link in the show notes, you can buy some of my merch. This full store opens up on Wednesday, March 1st. It closes on Friday, March 17th. And of course, this Friday is Bandcamp Friday with Bandcamp waives all of their fees. So I earn a little bit more with each purchase. So it's a good time to pick up one of those USBs to archive your music, you know. Or you can get a ticket to my St. Patrick's Day concert, which will be happening again on March 15th. All right, we're going to finish up with one final song. But before we go, if you love this episode, please let me know. Drop me a line. You can take a screenshot on your phone, post it on social media. You can tag me at KeltFather, and you can tell me what you like about this episode or what you'd like to hear in the future. Or you can, of course, send it, that same picture to pubsong@keltfather.net. Going to finish up with one more track from St. Patrick's Day. This is Tay the Begging, a song I learned from Ed Miller, and I love it. It's a beautiful song. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I'll be back in a couple weeks with an official St. Patrick's Day show, full-on St. Patrick's Day show. I'll talk to you later. Here's Tay the Begging. Sláinte.
begging I will go. And some will give me beef and bread, and some will give me cheese, and in and out among the folk I'll gather the bobbies.
To the begging I will go, the begging I will go.
Begging be as good a trade as I hope it may. It's time that I was out of here and heading down the break.
Thanks so much for listening to Sci-Fi Pub Songs and Stories. The show is brought to you by my Gunrunners on Patreon. Every week, you'll get a new podcast or song or video concert. You'll also save 25% off all my merch in my store. The show is edited by Mitchell Peterson with graphics by Miranda Nelson Designs. You can subscribe and listen to the show wherever you find podcasts. Sign up to my mailing list to read the show notes for this episode and find out where I'm performing. And of course, please tell one friend about this podcast. Word of mouth is the absolute best way to support any creative endeavor. Have fun and sing along at pubsong.com.